You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am your fill-in host, Christina Long, in here for Matt Jones today. He should be back later in the week, just a little bit under the weather. I think a lot of people are feeling that way right now. It seems like there's a lot of illness going around, especially as we're getting really cold here in Northwest Arkansas. We've got snow coming. We'll see what we end up having to do with the show on some of these snow days. We'll see if we have to take a snow day ourselves. But today we have a pretty basketball-heavy show. Anthony Christensen's with me in the studio today to talk about Texas A&M and the loss Arkansas took there this weekend. And then we'll look ahead a little bit to their game at number one Auburn on Wednesday. And then Dane Bradshaw of SEC Network, who was on the call for that game on Saturday, is going to join us over the phone today to talk a little bit about what he saw the other night and what he's seeing, you know, going forward for Arkansas and what he's seen around the SEC. But first of all, I mean, it was a really busy weekend around Arkansas athletics. I mean, it was busy for us. We were all kind of working at different events. At one point, we were all, you know, working on different things, covering different live sports. So baseball played three games against Washington State and won all three. They've got another one. And so I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about the series on the show tomorrow once it wraps up this afternoon. And softball's 10-0 after a big weekend at Louisiana Tech. That's their best start in program history. Track had a home meet, and of course they had record-setting performances like they always do, it seems like. I got to be out there on Saturday, and it was really, really fun to see them as always. And then gymnastics had a road meet. And then we'll do it all again next weekend. We've got more baseball, softball, gymnastics, basketball, track, everything going on at once. It is that time of year. But we're going to get into some basketball, and we're going to start looking back at Texas A&M. So, Anthony, I had this game on. I was at the track meet, and I had it on kind of in another window. So I was mostly keeping an eye on the score. I didn't get a chance to really lock in and watch too much. But I've read everything, you know, that you wrote and kept an eye a little bit on it. But before this game, you wrote a good story about how Arkansas was going to need, you know, really good play from its big men against Texas A&M, especially on the glass. You know, they got slightly out-rebounded, 35-32, 12-8 offensively. But as far as the play of the big men in Brazil and Adu and Ivicic, what did they get out of those guys? And did they kind of meet your expectations at all?
I mean, you mentioned the rebounding, so that didn't go poorly by any means. I think their rebounding numbers, like you said, were pretty even. Obviously, A&M did end up with a slight edge just because that's what A&M does.
Yeah.
That's what a Buzz Williams team does. They're always going to be strong on the boards. But I think when you look at it, the interior defense wasn't necessarily the best. You know, Ivicic got dunked on a couple of times. So, you know, get your posters and whatever. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing that you take away from that is that the inside game, I don't think, was necessarily what lost them the game. I think that was the turnovers, which, you know, I asked John Calipari about it. And, like, before I finished my question, he was just, like, shaking his head. Like, he frowned.
It was a very expressive press conference.
It was cinematic. but, yeah, so I think that's the big thing. But I thought you got some good moments out of Adu and Ivicic. You know, Ivicic especially started hitting some threes there at the end, which I thought A&M did a really good job of running him off of the perimeter and kind of forcing him to go inside. But Adu, I mean, it's not like he had, you know, an outstanding game by any means, but he did some good things. He rebounded pretty well. I think he got a block, got a steal, and I thought he was decent on the boards as well. You know, John Calipari is very complimentary of him after the game. Trevin Brazil just didn't really give them much. He was 0-2 from the field and had a couple rebounds. Did have an assist and a block, so, I mean, he had some moments, but, you know, not anything necessarily to really write home about. But when you look ahead to, like, Auburn, where Auburn is, I mean, they're going to beat you anywhere. That's how good this Auburn team is. I think you're going to need, you know, probably all three of those guys to step up again just because of how good Auburn is in the interior with a guy like Jahni Broome. I think you're going to, and John Calipari, you know, had hinted at maybe running, you know, Adu and Ivicic together, you know, in the future. So I would assume in that game. Just because of, I think the threat that Auburn poses in that regard, but yeah, there were some good moments from the big men, but overall, you know, a couple posters and, you know, A&M just doing what A&M does, and then obviously the turnovers, which isn't necessarily on the big men, but yeah,
with Brazil, when he is at his best or when he is contributing the most, what does that look like? Like, what do they need from him, really. Like, I guess I'm struggling to kind of grasp his role. I feel like he's kind of, at least for me,
he's kind of faded a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So what do they need out of him?
You kind of want him to, you kind of want him, I think, to play in a little bit of a point forward role. He's not the passer that Zvonimir Visic is, but you know, he's a guy who can step out and hit threes and do those kind of things for you. But you know, I over the past couple of games, I mean, he didn't score against A&M, and he hasn't scored more than 7 points since the Oakland game when he scored 9. He hasn't had double figures since North Carolina A&T. So you need him to kind of get going on the offensive end. And he showed some flashes of that in the non-conference game, especially you look at that Michigan game. He was huge down the stretch, made some big plays that kind of won them the game, or not necessarily won them the game, but were a big part of them winning the game against Michigan. So you look at some of the different games throughout the season, you've seen he's had those flashes where he has played to the level that you would expect him to, or at least the level he can get to, and they just haven't really been getting that. He's only started one game in SEC play, but only 4 in total. So I don't know if it's maybe him, I guess, maybe struggling in kind of a bench role, or you know what that might be. But for him to be at his best, I mean, he's a good defensive player. He gets a lot of blocks, can get some steals here and there as well, but he just hasn't really had that going for him. His shot hasn't been falling as much, or he hasn't been getting that many opportunities to shoot. Like I said, he only had 2 shots in 14 minutes against A&M, and some of that is A&M's defense. A&M, I think, is the 6th rated defense in the country right now per KenPom, and you know, that's, like I mentioned earlier, that's just Texas A&M. They're kind of the epitome of what Arkansas was trying to do for the Oklahoma and Georgia games, like murky the waters, but yeah. A&M does it so well. Never going to be the most fun team to watch, but they always they're very effective.
Checking that low score was very interesting throughout the game.
Yeah, like they're never going to be the most fun team to watch, but they're very, very effective, and Buzz Williams is a phenomenal coach, and he's been a phenomenal coach for a long time. So, I mean, he just kind of does that. But in regard to Brazil, I think you need to get him some more looks, maybe get him some easy looks at the basket before trying to get him to pop out and hit threes or whatever. But they definitely need him to get going more on the offensive end, I think.
One other thing I thought was interesting on the big man front was Calipari saying he might have to play Jonas Adu and Zvonimir Ivicic together a little bit more. What would that look like? And I guess, what are your thoughts on what that could do for them?
I think it could work. I mean, I think the ideal kind of perfect world scenario would be maybe trying to run them in a similar scenario to what Michigan does with Vlad Goldin and Danny Wolf. Okay. Not to say either of those guys are at the same level as Vlad Goldin or Danny Wolf, just because of how well those guys have played this season and how good they are together. But I think you could see them maybe try to run the pick and roll actions those guys do. I think Adu would be your 5-man, and you would probably shift Visic over to the 4 just because Visic has more of a shooting range than Adu does. He's more of a threat from 3 just because, I mean, I think he's hit like 44% of his 3s this season, 43% of his 3s, something like that. So I think that's kind of what you're looking at with that. And then on the defensive end, I mean, that just kind of gives you 2, you know, really big time blocking threats. I think Visic is also kind of underrated in stealing ability. I think he had 3 steals in the win over LSU. but I think defensively, I mean, those are those 2 guys can kind of be your anchor, especially when you're looking at this Auburn team with, you know, guys like Janai Broome or Chad Baker-Mazzara or, you know, Aiden Holloway, he's at Alabama now.
could have fooled me, I don't know.
Yeah, but, I mean, interior presence for Auburn is, like, obviously Janai Broome is one of the 2 guys who are going to win, one of the 2 guys who can win National Player of the Year along with Cooper Flagg at Duke. So the interior presence for Auburn is going to be huge. And I mean, obviously Auburn can hit threes. They can go in the mid range. They can do whatever they want, it seems.
Yeah.
So not necessarily going to just beat Auburn because you play 2 big guys, but I think that's probably what they're looking at, is trying to limit the interior threat Auburn poses, assuming they end up going with this for the Auburn game, just because it is obviously a quick turnaround. But yeah, I think that's kind of like the ideal world would be kind of the Golden Wolf kind of combo that Michigan has. But I don't know that that's necessarily what you would get from it, just because, I mean, they're not the same players.
Right.
They've got some different skill sets and everything, but and I'm not sure there's a better passer of the ball, at least as a big man, than Danny Wolf. But I think that's kind of your ideal scenario, your you know, shining city on the hill. you know, yeah, but I think mostly it's kind of being looked at from an interior presence on the right. defensive end, trying to limit looks at the basket and get some better rim protection.
Yeah, Golden Wolf might be the best combo name.
I've never thought about that.
As soon as you said it, I was like, Golden Wolf? You
think Dusty May did that just
I hope
for that?
So. That's what I would
the
do.
The Golden Wolf.
If I were a coach, I would just, yeah, I would try to put that together.
You try to put together the all name team.
Exactly, for sure. But okay, so as far as guard play goes, I mean, you wrote a little bit about Carter Knox's kind of emergence. He led them in points the other night with, what, 17? Mm-hmm. His emergence over the past five games, you wrote about it and how he's improved. He's improved his scoring average. Just what's kind of changed for him over this stretch?
Not necessarily anything changing. I don't think he's really doing anything different. I think it's just that his shots have started falling. I think he looked a little bit more confident, maybe. I think that's kind of the big thing. I mean, he's getting to the free throw line a lot, too. He's top 20 in the SEC for free throw rate, not necessarily, you know, hitting them. I mean, he's shooting 80% from the free throw line, so it's not, like, obviously that's very good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's getting to the line. You know, he's hitting his threes, too, which he's at 40% in SEC play alone, which puts him at 14th in conference play in the SEC. So that's kind of the thing, and I think he's driving really well. I think I wrote that he's like shooting 80% at the rim.
Oh yeah.
You know, and his corner threes are what, you know, he loves those corner threes,
right.
And for good reason. I mean, he's hitting them at a very high rate. And I mean, some of these numbers aren't going to be, you know, sustainable necessarily. Like he's shooting, his true shooting is at 73% over the past five games, which is 99th percentile. You know, his three-point shooting over the last five games is 7 of 10, which also puts him 99th percentile. Not numbers that you're going to...
Right, see him keep up for the rest of...
No, like, it's just not possible.
Yeah.
it's like Steph Curry's not going to shoot...
Right, it's a sample size issue, yeah.
Or I mean, maybe he is, even Steph Curry.
Well,
changed
that's
basketball,
true.
But I think that's kind of what you're looking at. I mean, these numbers aren't going to be necessarily sustainable, but he's playing very well. He's getting to his spots. He's making good moves, good reads, and he's also kind of creating his own shot. He's kind of added, or not necessarily kind of added. I mean, you saw it a little bit in non-conference play. He's added like a step back element, which I think he's starting to utilize a little bit more against higher level opposition, which I think you definitely saw it at the end of the first half against Kentucky. You saw it, I think, against A&M the other day. So he's adding that, and he's not necessarily the flashiest scorer ever, but you know he's been very efficient. He's been very effective. You know, he's shooting 40% on corner threes and 80% at the basket. So I mean, those are two of the most efficient shots in college basketball or basketball in general. So I mean, those are the kind of shots you want him to get, and he's taking advantage of those. But you know, whether or not you know those numbers are sustainable, you know, that's a different conversation, but you know, those are the shots you want him to be getting. Those are the shots you want him to be looking for, you know, instead of necessarily like these mid-range shots. He's not necessarily very efficient on mid-range, you know, looks, and he's also not very efficient from straightaway threes. So that's kind of like, you want him in the corner and you want him driving. And I think his driving game has also kind of improved a lot in recent games as well.
Last thing for this first segment, just what was the, I've never been to College Station. What was the Texas A&M experience? Did you enjoy it? What was the, you said you liked the song. You liked the
singing. I liked the song.
Dancing.
I liked the little, like, because the whole arena, like, they do the arm thing.
Yeah,
like,
it looks cool, I guess.
It looked cool, and
I'll
I was like,
that.
Okay, that's kind of neat. But it was kind of a weird environment. I think I mentioned that off air, that it was a little bit odd.
Yeah. How was the crowd? I mean, was it pretty high energy?
For the most part, yeah, but there was other times where it's like dead silent too. So
do you think
like,
that's a product of them not playing very exciting basketball?
Maybe. That's a good question. But like John Calipari mentioned it in his post-game press mm-hmm. conference. Like he looked over the bench, he's like, it's silent.
Yeah, that's
listen
crazy.
To this. And I remember like realizing that. I was like, this place, there's nothing going on in
very
terms
weird.
Of like noise. But like they've got the dudes in uniform who
oh,
are
yeah.
like...
Mm-hmm.
And like that was weird.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
No disrespect. It's nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
The arena is kind of funky looking.
Yeah, I saw the photos.
Yeah,
we sent our photographer Hank Layton, and he got some nice photos.
I think I mentioned it off air. It kind of looks like an old Soviet structure. no disrespect.
I wonder when it was neat. When was Rita Reno built?
I have no idea. I should have looked that up.
I'm going to find out right now. Oh, it opened in 1998. So that's actually later than I would have thought. Okay. I would have thought it was older than
Interesting.
That,
but yeah, it was neat.
Yeah.
I had a good pizza after the game.
There you go.
So that was nice. I wouldn't say College Station is my favorite town I've been to.
It's not typically highly rated among SEC towns. Yeah.
But, you know, It was neat.
Yeah, I'd love to go to a football game there just because of how huge the stadium is.
Oh, the stadium's huge. You can't miss the stadium.
Yeah, like, I'd love to go to a football game there.
Yeah, Hank and I, our photographer, you know, we saw it like from like a mile away just because it's bigger than everything else in the city. And it's just like, oh,
there it is. Yeah.
Can't miss that.
Right. I imagine it's pretty flat too, so it's the kind of thing where
you can see
it from all around.
We're driving, like we make a left turn to like, move towards the arena, and it's like, oh shoot, there it is.
Almost
cursed.
You saved it. Good job.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think I know Matt. He went for baseball last year and like loved it. Like thought it was so cool. Like I think they just do. I think just because of
it's very different. It's a unique experience, which I enjoyed.
Like their fan base or not, you have to admit.
I enjoyed the uniqueness of it because it's different than what you're gonna get anywhere else. So I appreciate that. And yeah, it was fun for the most part.
Yeah,
there were the weird silences were different.
Yeah,
but,
that's awesome.
And the stadium the arena could use a facelift.
Yeah.
not to say like it was a fine arena. Yeah. I've been in much worse arenas.
That's I believe that.
but you know. Overall, it was good.
Good.
It was good. Cool stuff.
When we come back, Dane Bradshaw from SEC Network will join us to talk a little bit more about what he saw from Arkansas and Texas A&M. And then Anthony will be back with me at the end of the show to kind of look ahead and talk about the tournament picture and the upcoming game against Auburn.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are Design.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Dane Bradshaw of SEC Network, who called Arkansas's loss to Texas A&M the other night over in College Station. Dane, we really appreciate you being on with us today.
Oh, awesome to be on with you guys, and sorry it's not to discuss a road win, but it's part of playing in the SEC. Those are hard to come by.
I know, yeah. I kind of thought this was going to be one that Arkansas could have, and they certainly had a shot at it, but the story of the game really seemed to be the turnovers. Just what was A&M doing so well to force those? And then how much of it do you think was, you know, there were kind of just some silly mistakes by Arkansas and some of them as well?
Yeah, I don't think Arkansas did themselves any favors. You know, they missed some layups and dunks and transition. They had a couple bunnies just at the rim, even in the half court. And you just got to capitalize on those because A&M is so good defensively. They play a unique style of defense too, and as a point guard, it's very difficult to ever get comfortable or in a rhythm when playing against them, because one minute you think they're pressing, but it's kind of a false press, and then you know they do a good job just keeping the ball on one side of the floor in your half court. And so I thought, you know, if you're going to win a game on the road against a top 10 team in the country, it takes something special. And I thought Arkansas played hard. They just they didn't play great because of some of those turnovers you alluded to, and I thought the staff just really struggled to find a good five person lineup that could take care of the ball, that could still put it in the hole and be solid defensively. And you've got some guys who can help with some of those strengths, but then they give up too much in another one of those categories. So that's where I have sympathy for the staff of just trying to figure out who's best to play in a game like that bad matchup for Arkansas.
Yeah, it's kind of been the story of a lot of Arkansas's losses is just it feels like whenever they solve one problem, another one pops up, or, you know, it just feels like as soon as they plug a hole, another one opens. And so that's kind of been what's happened to them throughout the year. I want to talk to you about Wade Taylor for Texas A&M. He didn't shoot all that efficiently, but he was still really important to the result of that game. and he's been playing college basketball for so long. Just how is he able to affect a game, and especially this particular game, even when he's not all the way on from a shooting standpoint?
Yeah, they shoot with a lot of confidence, even if the numbers say they shouldn't have that confidence. But and they get so many offensive rebounds to where even if they take a questionable shot or miss, they're okay with it. And I asked Wade Taylor after the game in our interview, I said, "Do you guys, I kind of joked, do y'all even have any idea what your shooting percentage is?" He goes, "No, we don't look at any of that." I mean, so they've got that confidence that you have to have, and the short memory that I think is really important. And so they're the aggressor, and I think that's what helps them get to the free throw line. They've won a lot of close games. They're not unbeatable by any means. I mean, there's a lot of teams in this league that have taken them down to the wire that aren't necessarily the top teams in the league, but they scheduled tougher than Buzz Williams ever has in the non-conference. So they were battle tested entering conference play to where they're prepared to win these close games down the stretch. And to your point, Wade Taylor seems like he's been there forever, and it's the only school he's ever been at. And you get some of that continuity, and you'd like to think that pays off in the era of the transfer portal for a team like A&M.
What did you think of Arkansas from a defensive perspective? I mean, they held them scoreless for the first 4 minutes or so, but what did you make of the rest of that game, especially with the style that Texas A&M plays?
Yeah, I thought defensively, in spurts, Arkansas was good. I think Jonas Adu actually quietly did a pretty good job defensively. And trying to figure out, all right, how do you, I heard Calipari after the game think, well, maybe I need to play he and Big Z together to where, I still have some girth down low defensively, but have, a shooter on the offensive end that can spread the court the way Big Z can. So, defensively, the efforts there, I like the way Knox plays. I love the energy that Richmond plays with. And that's really where they're going to have to hang their hat, because if you take away Big Z's three-point shooting, the rest of the team in conference play, I believe, is a combined like 25-26%. Like it's concerningly bad from deep. And so you say, all right, well, I don't know that just getting up extra shots after practice is really going to change that narrative. But can they become a really elite defensive team? And I think that's got a higher ceiling than maybe fixing the offensive side.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you more about Jonas Adu, too, since you're a Tennessee guy and had a great career there. Jonas has had, you know, kind of an up-and-down year. He's been dealing with an injury. He started to come on a little bit more, played more minutes the other night than he has in a while. What did you see from him a little bit more? And then how is he different, maybe, or similar from his time at Tennessee?
Well, you hit on it. I do think he got off to the slow start because of the foot injury. And he was getting double doubles. I mean, I really thought I had him on my preseason all SEC team. I thought he'd be a second team guy. I thought he was on the fringe last year behind guys like Tolu Smith and Janai Broom. He wasn't quite up there, but I thought like he's going to really break through and has not been able to get into a rhythm. But he's a guy, if you can get him deep post positions, he's really good with his right, or he can do a left jump hook. He could shoot a nice little 10 to 15 foot jumper, even step out and shoot a three. And we just hadn't seen that versatility this year. He's another guy that just hadn't been able to get into any sort of rhythm right now. But look, this is such a roller coaster year for Arkansas, and I'm not sure that, that you're always just going to see a guy playing great for, you know, several weeks in a row. They got to be prepared a little bit for the roller coaster and just try to and somewhat hope that everybody is hitting at the right time come March, because, you know, Big Z was nowhere to be found to start SEC play. Then he exploded the past few weeks, and now he didn't have the best game Saturday. So Adu's got to stay ready for that opportunity and see if they can't get him more minutes. But I do think he's, you know, even though I've touched on his offensive stuff, I think it's his defensive presence that's going to get him more playing time.
Arkansas has Auburn next, and I don't know off the top of my head if you've done Auburn games much this year, but they've looked so good and so difficult to beat. What specific challenges is Auburn presenting, and what do they do particularly well? Because it feels sometimes like they do just about everything well.
Yeah, they're so locked in defensively. They probably don't get enough credit on that side of the ball. And Bruce Pearl will do a lot of switching. But it's very strategic switching. It's not just convenient switches. There's a purpose to it. And offensively, of course, they can go through the big man, Jani Broom, down low. But he's really a skilled passer out of the post. And they run a lot of good action. I mean, they call a lot of set plays, and they're good plays, and they got a lot of counters and what you call exit action. And just like, all right, you take away this, then you take away that defensively, and then here comes a third or fourth action towards the end of the shot clock that just makes it really hard for the defense to guard. And I think one of the things, too, is Bruce Pearl's telling his team right now, hey, guys, I've been in one of these 1-2 matchups before where we won the game, and we're so emotionally drained, we went and lost at Vanderbilt. That's what happened when he was at Tennessee. They beat John Calipari's Memphis team in that famous 1-2 game in 08 and lost the next one. So I'm sure he's telling his team right now, like, hey, this is what we learned from that. And the next opponent is licking their chops thinking, all right, they brought their A game for that rivalry and that 1-2 matchup, and we're going to catch them on a hangover here in midweek. So that's something that I think I'm sure Pearl is trying to get his team to avoid.
You've been all around the SEC this season and before. What's it been like calling these games with how deep the SEC is? Because it feels like there's no game that's not meaningful for at least one of these teams, just with how much is on the line and how much, you know, how competitive this league is.
Yeah, we've been spoiled. It's been a blast, and you've had a lot of close games. The atmospheres have been electric. And teams are playing meaningful games in February, whereas in years past, it was maybe half the league. And so one team was playing for something. The other team was just trying to see if they could, you know, find a way to get on the NIT list. And so, but right now, 90% of the teams or more are playing for the postseason lives. And so it's been really cool to see. And I joked with somebody the other day, is like, and because the national story is all about the SEC, and that's certainly where my heart is and what I've followed for so many years, it's like getting permission to just talk about your own kids all the time, because that's the storyline night in, night out is SEC.
Have any of these teams surprised you in particular, or, you know, teams or players or anything in particular with this league that I don't think anybody expected it to be quite as strong as it is for as long as it has been, but any particular, you know, games or teams that have stood out to you as surprises?
Yeah, I'd say Vanderbilt and Missouri would probably be the dark horse. Dennis Gates in Missouri had a great year one where it was just really a magical first year. He coached his tail off, but any close game they had, it just felt like they were coming up with the right play, the right buzzer shot, and it just couldn't have gone better. And then in year two, it couldn't have gone worse. They went 0-18, and so you started to wonder, all right, is the truth somewhere in the middle, or is it on the bad side? And Dennis Gates has shown that they corrected some of their roster issues, and they're looking much more like the year one team that he had that made the NCAA tournament. And actually, I think it's the best team he's had in 3 years. I think they're even better than that first year team. And then Vanderbilt, I believe I'd have to look back. I'm pretty sure I picked them to finish last in the league, as did a lot of people. And Coach Byington has just found ways to win close games. They've got the home court advantage that they really haven't had in 5 years there at Vanderbilt. So it's been cool to see that come back. And right now, but it's we've got four or five teams right there on the bubble: Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt. So it's going to be really interesting to see who can hang on here and solidify their resume. Plenty of quality win opportunities for them over the next few weeks. Just got to find a way to get a couple.
Yeah, what do you make of Arkansas from a tournament perspective? Because it seemed like, you know, the Texas A&M game, winning that would have helped them so much. Their tournament hopes aren't necessarily dashed now, but it does look a little harder to build that resume with what they have left. And, you know, they might have to have a big SEC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the positive is you get opportunity after opportunity, and there's not really much left on the schedule that's going to hurt you if you're Arkansas. And it's, you know, that Kentucky win is going to have some shelf life. The Michigan win continues to reward Arkansas because Michigan continues to play better and better. I believe they're in the lead in the Big Ten right now. So can that Kentucky win catapult them? And I think it has, but I've got to be honest, I've been flip-flopping. I mean, when they were, 0-5, I think, to start SEC play, I thought I would be more surprised if they did make the tournament than if they didn't. And then after that Kentucky win, they won a couple. I'm like, you know what? Now I'm more surprised if they don't make the tournament. I'm right there on the fence now. I don't know what the heck's going to happen because it is a tough team to figure out. But as Calipari told his team afterwards, like, look, I'm going to give you confidence, but I also got to point out the reality that it's not okay. We can't play like this if we're trying to get to the tournament. So they're going to have to man up. And, as a competitor, if you lose one on the road, you want to play somebody big time in your next game, and no better opportunity than number one Auburn.
Well, Dane, we appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk a little basketball with us, and thank you so much. And maybe you'll have another Arkansas game here in the future.
Of course. Always fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back here in the studio again with Anthony Christensen to look a little bit ahead to the Auburn game as well as the big picture tournament situation for Arkansas basketball. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. And if you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas and for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Calipari said repeatedly after this game that this was their chance at another marquee win, that this really, you know, like I told Dane a minute ago, it wasn't a game that they had to have to keep their tournament hopes alive, but it would have helped a lot. And now it's just a little bit of a tougher
road. It'd be cool
road.
If you did.
Exactly. They go to number one Auburn next. Another opportunity in theory, but I mean, it's going to be really, really tough. I guess what chance do you give them at actually like pulling this off on the road? Like, what would they have to do to have it? I mean,
well, they'd have to play their best game of the season.
Yeah.
And Auburn would have to play probably its worst game of the season.
Yeah.
Which Auburn in its losses lost at Duke by 6, which obviously Cameron Indoor has, you know, always been lauded as probably the best home court advantage of the in the country, and then they lost to Florida by 9, which Florida is obviously very good, and I don't know if that game just kind of caught them napping, maybe, I don't know, but Florida really controlled that game, so I don't know if you can take some notes from that Florida game and just study up on whatever Todd Golden had them doing and whatever, but obviously Florida is a different team with different strengths than Arkansas, so that kind of would be concerning.
Yeah.
What chance would I give them? Well, not a great one. this Auburn team is phenomenal. I think, and this might be wrong, so I apologize if it is, but I think Auburn right now rates as the best team in the KenPom era, which is insane. At this point in time, KenPom gives Arkansas a 6% chance to win the game.
Okay.
And has
it's
Auburn
more than zero.
It is more than zero. Auburn is favored by 18 points.
Oh wow, I didn't realize it was that big.
Yes. So it's stacked against them.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it's been done, but no. I mean, I think this would be a huge deal, but it would be
if they win, they give themselves a lot of wiggle room.
Yes.
To get into the tournament, but yeah, Auburn is obviously, I mean, Auburn's phenomenal. Auburn is very, very good. Jani Broome, as we mentioned earlier, may be National Player of the Year, certainly SEC Player of the Year in my book. But Yeah.
I think any team is going to have a low percent chance of winning. Let's take a look at this.
Let's take a look at this.
Who else they've
got? Auburn has a 94% chance to beat Arkansas, 94% chance to beat Georgia, 89% chance to beat Ole Miss, 68% to beat Kentucky on the road, 66% chance to beat Texas A&M on the road, and then an 81% chance to beat Auburn or Alabama at home.
So not amazing odds for anybody, really. I mean, it gets better than the 94, 96, yeah. Whatever. So, I mean, it's a tough ask for Arkansas to win. So, assuming that this is a loss, what is their next best shot at a resume-boosting win? I mean, like, how much would beating Missouri help or Mississippi State or
Beating Missouri would help a lot. You're looking at a Mizzou team that is, you know, 15th in KenPom right now, which is its highest rating in many years. You're looking at, you know, a team that, you know, has marquee wins, beat Florida on the road, beat Kansas, which maybe the Kansas win hasn't necessarily aged super well, but still number one at the time. It's beaten a lot of good teams in the SEC, went down to the wire with that A&M team, you know, just smacked the crap out of Oklahoma and Georgia, and beat Ole Miss, beat Mississippi State by 700 on the road, and, you know, also beat this Arkansas team pretty handily, and beat Vanderbilt as well. And that's a good win if they can get it. You know, obviously that's probably the best resume opportunity they have on the schedule remaining. I mean, at Vanderbilt would be quad one, against Mississippi State's quad one. Most of these are going to be quad one. Texas at home probably might be quad two. I think it's quad one. I think it's quad one. I don't know. I don't have all the quadrants in front of me, but. Like Dane said, I mean, they've got the opportunities to build a resume. The little landmine you see there is South Carolina on the road, which obviously South Carolina still winless in SEC play. Can they do it? Can the Gamecocks win a game? Which they're not projected to.
Right?
They're not projected to, but we've got the Crap Bowl on Tuesday, LSU at South Carolina. So we'll see what
Somebody has to win the game.
LSU did just beat Oklahoma.
Okay.
So there is that.
That's something. Oklahoma. Yeah, I was seeing a lot of Oklahoma tweets this weekend.
Spiraling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, getting closer and closer to that bubble. They're certainly on the bubble. Yeah. Closer and closer to that NIT. but we'll see. South Carolina not projected to win any of their games the rest of the season.
But they could. So, I mean, if they could spoil something for some of these teams, bubble teams, that would be
something to hang their hat on. And South Carolina at home, I mean, they took Auburn to the buzzer, they took Florida to the buzzer, took Mississippi State to overtime. You know, so at home, I mean, they've challenged some teams. They lost by four against Ole Miss. I think they led or were tied pretty late in that game. And so, I mean, at home, South Carolina, for whatever reason, challenges teams, keeps them on their toes, and just for whatever reason is able to keep them in the game. So maybe they sneak one of these games there in Columbia. So we'll see. But that's the landmine. You lose that game without...
Are you pretty much done?
You would think so.
Yeah.
You lose that game without, you know, say, an Auburn win or a win against Missouri or, you know, whatever... You know, that looks pretty bad.
Yeah.
That would be tough.
If Arkansas were to lose to Missouri, I mean, what would that... say they lose to Auburn, then they lose to Missouri. Where does that put them? I mean, if they win out after that, how optimistic are the tournament... I mean, I know it depends a little bit on what other
that,
people do.
It you would think that would still be enough, mm-hmm. at least to get them to Dayton. Just because, I mean, they're not projected to beat either of Auburn or Missouri. Just because, I mean, both of those teams are having phenomenal seasons, and you know, Bruce Pearl, Dennis Gates, both probably in that Coach of the Year debate. You know, obviously Bruce Pearl probably the odds-on favorite, unless you want to go with like a Pat Kelsey at Louisville or Dusty May or Mark Pope or whoever. Yeah, so there's wiggle room if you lose both of those games. More wiggle room if you beat Missouri and lose to Auburn, or beat Auburn and lose to Missouri. But if you lose both the games, you know, you're still, I mean, it's not going to destroy your resume by any means, but
yeah,
would help if you got one. I mean, you would expect them to beat Texas at home, beat Texas. I know Texas made it interesting in the end, but was pretty beat Texas pretty handily there in Austin. You cannot lose to South Carolina.
Yeah.
You just can't. if you want to get into the tournament. Vanderbilt on the road is tricky. If you lose that without another marquee win, I think that one might hurt. Just because Vanderbilt's also on that bubble, kind of trying to get into the, trying to get in. You know, right now I think they're kind of projected last four byes or last four in. You know, wherever they may end up, be it Dayton or in the field proper. But yeah, and then Mississippi State at the end of the season, not the same level of opportunity as Missouri or Auburn, but you know, still a team that's solidly in the tournament. So if you get a win in that one, that would be a big boost, or at least a boost. Maybe not a big boost, but a boost. But if they were to lose each of their next two games against Auburn and Missouri, but then win out, I would think that they'd probably give themselves a pretty healthy chance at getting in.
How much could they need to do at the SEC tournament? Like, how much could that help them?
It's difficult to say, just because a lot, given the like the SEC tournament runs until Selection Sunday, a lot of the decisions are already made, or at least they have been in years past. I'm not sure if that is what the committee's going to do again, you know, this year, but it could help. It could help, especially, you know, with seeding. Maybe they win a game or two in the SEC tournament, and they go from, you know, Dayton to, you know, whatever, an 11 seed that's in the field proper, or 10 seed, or maybe even wiggle their way into an 8-9 game or something like that. That would be like 8-9 game is like the best case scenario that they have at this stage, you know, unless they were to just win out from this point on, which
would be tough to do.
Yeah, you know, would be difficult, but not impossible.
I like the optimism.
But yeah, I am optimistic, Sydney. So, she was saying I wasn't an optimistic person earlier. So
for I thinking gotta, that Auburn gotta, yeah, would be too hard.
Yeah, Auburn's really good. But no.
The SEC tournament, it won't
necessarily hurt them. Yeah. So because a lot of the decisions are made in the build up to that, or during that week building up to Selection Sunday. So it wouldn't necessarily be a huge deterrence for them, unless it were, again, to like lose to South Carolina or maybe LSU or somebody like that. So could help in theory. Like you go and win in Nashville, win the whole thing. maybe obviously that would get them in regardless, but I mean, win a game or two, maybe you improve your seeding, maybe get out of Dayton, do something like that. Assuming, you know, these next games go in their favor, like, you know, lose to Missouri or lose to Auburn or both, and then maybe you win out.
Yeah.
Which obviously that's going to be a very difficult. Texas is very capable, just beat Kentucky, has beaten Missouri. So Texas is weird. but also Texas loses to, you know, whoever, Arkansas. So Texas is kind of a funky resume that's kind of right there on the bubble with them. So winning that game would be big for them. You can't lose to South Carolina. That's the big takeaway of this whole show. You lose to South Carolina,
you're done.
Yeah, get the shovel. You're digging, buddy. The grave is there. But yeah, you lose to South Carolina, that's bad. Losing to Vanderbilt wouldn't be good, because Vanderbilt's also on that bubble. You beat Mississippi State, that would be big. Mississippi State, a loss to Mississippi State would hurt more than like a loss to, you know, A&M or Auburn or Missouri, but mm-hmm. I don't think it would be like detrimental or anything.
I gotcha. It wouldn't kill it the way that South Carolina would.
Yes. Yeah. South Carolina is the the Grim Reaper.
If they can do it. The opportunity is there.
Yes. Yeah. South Carolina is wanting to play spoiler for somebody, I'm sure. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's my big takeaway, just kind of looking at the rest of their schedule here.
Yeah. Well, Anthony will be in Auburn. He'll have all the coverage of the game at wholehogsports.com. I think, is Hank going with you for photos?
That's the hope.
Awesome. We'll have some good photo and video
weather
content.
Weather pending.
Yes. Yeah, hopefully. We wish you safe travels.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. And hopefully we're able to make it to the studio here the next couple days with the weather. We expect to be here tomorrow, but we appreciate you joining us today, and we look forward to talking some baseball and more on the rest of the show this week.